So that seems to relate to what we had discussed about challenge the other day. You are saying that the greater the challenge, the greater the sense of satisfaction one might derive from work?
Yes, certainly. For example, in the case of my own responsibility for the Tibetan people and nation, as I mentioned, our present tragedy is in fact the result of many complex factors, including Tibet's own long period of negligence and ignorance of the events in the outside world. Yet when I recognize the gravity of the situation, the fact that the very survival of Tibetans as a people with their unique cultural heritage is threatened, I can then appreciate the value of even the smallest contribution I can make towards safeguarding the Tibetan people. This, in turn, reinforces my understanding of how my work in relation to the issue of Tibet is, in actual fact, part of my lifelong daily spiritual practice, the practice of someone who deeply believes that helping others is the highest goal of a spiritual practitioner. In this way, in my own life, my work becomes intimately connected with my daily prayer and meditation practice. For example, I find the use of analytical meditation helpful to generate deeper conviction in the principles of nonviolence, of compassion, of forgiveness, especially toward the communist Chinese. So you see, there is a kind of mutual influence between my commitment to certain spiritual values, my daily spiritual practice, their impact on my overall thinking and attitude to life, and how these in turn affect my political work for the people of Tibet. Then my political work influences my spiritual practice. In fact, there is an interconnected relationship between everything. If I enjoy a good breakfast, for instance, it contributes to my health. And if I enjoy good health, it's possible to utilize my life to carry on my work. Even a simple smile can have some impact on my overall state of mind. So everything is interconnected, interdependent. When you appreciate the interconnected nature of all aspects of your life, then you will understand how various factors, such as your values, your attitudes, your emotional state, can all contribute to your sense of fulfillment at work and to your satisfaction and happiness in life.
At last, things fell into place. I finally understood how the Dalai Lama could claim, "I do nothing," as his job description. Of course, I knew that with his lighthearted humor, there was a tongue-in-cheek element to this job description. And behind his joking about doing nothing, I knew of his natural reluctance, which I have observed on many occasions, to engage in unnecessary self-appraisal. This seemed to grow out of his lack of self-involvement, absence of self-absorption, and lack of concern for how others view his work, as long as he had sincere motivation to be of help to others. But there was a deeper truth here as well. As I had begun to understand during our discussion of personal strengths, he is someone who has completely fused his self with his work. His personal life and work life were perfectly integrated. So fully integrated, in fact, that there was no separation between his personal life, work life, spiritual life, or home life. And since he did not separate out a particular set of functions and relegate them to a job category, he had no job. I do nothing. I have often marveled, in fact, at how he carries his full self with him wherever he goes. He seems the same in any setting. He has no off-duty personality. So, being fully present in every activity he did, the Dalai Lama had little need to modify or change his behavior based on the setting. He is who he is, the same whether he's at home or at work. There must be an immense feeling of freedom in that kind of life, I mused. I thought back to an extraordinary scene I had witnessed the previous year. The Dalai Lama was visiting Washington, D.C., and one evening he attended a reception held in his honor at the Capitol building. The reception was given by Senator Dianne Feinstein and was attended by Washington's elite, a virtual who's who of Washington power brokers. The event was held in the richly decorated appropriations room in the Senate side of the Capitol building. Ambassadors, high-ranking senators, and leaders of Congress glided silently across the plush red carpet under ornate crystal chandeliers, surrounded by fresco-like murals in muted colors covering the walls and ceiling.